You're listening to Around Comics, episode 233, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic donuts. Books and comics culture and donuts.
And donuts.
And Around Comics is normally recorded at Dark Tower
Those
Comics and
Larson.
Collectibles.
Oh, the other boxes.
But this week we are coming to you from Challengers Comics and Conversation, located at 1845 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in
Sweet
the area,
B. Yeah. We're in Suite B.
We are in Suite B of Challengers Comics. They've got us in the side room.
I feel like a rave's going to break. God, if we stay too long.
Did you bring your glow sticks?
The reason that we are at Challengers because it's Free Comic Book Day. Woo-hoo! And let me get you introduced to our panel, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I'm drinking some delicious coffee.
It is. I know. This is a morning show, so we've had to switch the beer and whiskey in for Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks.
Yeah.
The good news is we're way more alert.
Yeah.
I'm not tired.
We won't be
tired already.
Next is Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello, and welcome to Free Comic Book Day.
Good morning. I'm used to seeing you in the morning, though.
Yeah, well, we work together.
Yeah.
Don't say that, because people could take that the wrong way. Well, we don't live together. We don't sleep together. Yeah. He doesn't roll over and see me.
Morning, honey.
Yeah.
And our special guest this week, and the reason that we're at Challengers, well, I mean, we like Challengers. It's a great store, but this week...
But we don't come unless they bring a guest.
Yeah, superstar guest at that.
Otherwise, there you go.
Which they have done this week for Free Comic Book Day. One of the founding fathers of Image Comics and the creative force behind Savage Dragon, Mr. Eric Larson.
Yay.
Yeah.
Hello.
Would you like another shot? Hello. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Mr. Larson, first of all, thank you for coming to Chicago and Free Comic Book Day all the way out from California.
Yes.
So weather's
fun. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Weather. I actually left rain, so
you brought California weather with you.
This is not bad. I will put up with this.
Yeah, you deal with it. Yeah, you should. You just missed the sneaky 80-degree weather like last.
Yeah, last week.
Last week,
weekend, which Friday, Saturday
convinced everyone like let's start wearing shorts, and then it dropped to 45 degrees
and rain.
Yeah, we had a week like that. That was just like what the hell, man? Come on,
tricking us.
Get it together.
You're tricking us.
Well, as I said just a minute ago, you are the creative force behind Savage Dragon, and it's a good time to mention our sponsor, InStockTrades.com. And right now, if you want to relive the early adventures of Savage Dragon, you can certainly do so. InStockTrades.com has the Savage Dragon Archives Volume 1 discounted a fantastic 47% off the cover price. I know, 47%.
You still get the same amount of money.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Oh, boy.
Your kids will be able to eat. You'll be all right.
Okay.
I saw the look on his face.
I'm going to get my God to start again. For crying out.
Oh. I'm not even going to get a quarter for that.
That is 616 pages of Savage Dragon goodness for only...
We forgot to tell you, you do
$10.59.
You are going to have to start paying people in the future to read your book.
Wow.
And this is different in what way?
Well, I tell you what, that's you know, obviously that is the series that you are most closely associated with.
Good, it's about time, man.
Finally.
After
15, 20
years. Other stuff.
Well, we just had to
DNA
make sure.
Agents, you could get, you know, couldn't shake that.
We just had to make sure you were really going to stick with it. You know, before
commitment. We needed a commitment from you.
And it made sense to bring you to Chicago for Free Comic Book Day because Savage Dragon is one of the only Chicago-based superheroes that we know of. I mean, there's a few sprinkled out there, but Savage Dragon is probably the most well-known Chicago-based superhero. Why'd you pick Chicago?
You know, it just seemed like a good idea at the time. You know?
Now you regret
I mean,
it?
No, it's
that's
one
the kind
of
deep answers that we're looking for.
Well, it's the thing is, I kind of think of Dragon as existing in the universe where Dick Tracy's villains have all inbred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so,
okay. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, and he was based in Chicago, and there's the sort of the mobster history of, and it's like, you know, with Dragon being a cop and all that, it just seemed like a natural fit.
Was it a sort of the idea of like, well, you know, everybody else is either in a make-believe city or New York.
Yeah, there was also that. Yeah. It was like, okay, everybody else has got New York covered.
Yeah.
And also I wanted Dragon to be set in sort of a world where every other comic book character from every other company coexist. Okay. So that when he bumps into somebody, it's not like, hey, you're not, so it's not complicated.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So he lives in a crossover universe, sort of. So when he meets Superman, they don't have to go through all these gyrations in order to get together. It's just, hey, look, there comes that guy.
Right.
Superman just doesn't go to Chicago often.
Yeah. He just doesn't come by all that much. Yeah. You know, I also figure, you know, that we don't see every waking moment of the character anyway. We're getting his glimpse into a month, you know, every issue. And so it's like, oh, maybe you met Superman yesterday.
I actually went back and I had bought Savage Dragon when it first started coming out. And then sometime in one of my college moves, I lost all of my issues. And I was like, oh, I haven't read any of those old ones in a long time. So I picked up the archive and I got the free comic book issue number 148 that came out. And I was like, whoa. It looks really good in black and white. Like, it really blew me away.
Not to disparage your colors at all.
Yeah, not to disparage the color, but I was like, whoa, that looks really awesome. And I do have to say, I'm going to start with flattery. Your art has always been awesome, but I have to credit you with the fact that your writing has become really, really good. Not that the writing in the archive is bad, but reading the current stuff compared, I was like, whoa, that is, it's like... you can definitely see a lot of growth as far as like writing wise, and I was like, oh, that's really impressive. It kind of snuck up. Sometimes when you read something for a really long time, especially in a case where it's one person working on something for a really long time, you don't notice how much someone can change and get better. Even the best artist or best writer is going to get better doing stuff over and over again. So I was like, oh wow, that's pretty cool to look at that. Yeah, so I wanted to start with flattery.
Aww. Small blushes and giggles.
insults comment about the 20-minute mark.
Yeah, then I'm softening you up.
You know, that's...
Actually, the cool thing just about the archives book was that I still have all the original art. I never sold any of the original art.
Oh, wow,
so,
really?
So we scanned in from the original art when we did the archives.
Oh, and then, it looks awesome. Yeah.
So, yeah, it looks as awesome as it can, essentially.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, okay, this is as good as it's going to get. Deal with it.
The one thing that does bother me, and this is only because I'm a complete nerd, is that the white cover gets all smudged with black from holding the books.
From the newsprint.
And there's the nerdy part of me. It's like, I don't care about that. And then there's the other part of me that's like, oh, there's some black ink on the front of it. But for that price, I'll suffer. I'll suffer.
Another, you know?
Oh yeah, there you
just
go.
Buy two. I know this place is selling them for like 47% off. Great
buy
deal.
Buy two of them in a shot.
Yeah,
two
there
of them
you
in
go.
A shot.
Well, I had actually in the last week, you know, much like you, Tom, I had read Savage Dragon when it first came out, and I probably read the first, I don't know, 50, 60 issues of it, and at some point in the
You
Late.
Better have been attacked by a dog, because there's any other excuse. It's going to wail into you. I'm just saying. I'm right here.
For whatever reason, I had stopped reading it, but I went back just this week, and I had picked up at a convention the Gang War trade or collection, and started reading it again. I honestly haven't read it in a while, and the thing that I think I was amazed the most about was just how much I had sort of fooled myself into thinking that stuff that came out in the 90s, because we always talk about, you know, especially comic book fans talk about the 90s like it's this nightmare time. And I think a lot of that is sort of us convincing
ourselves.
Not for
ourselves. Me, man.
Yeah, not for you. I'm sure it was a completely
those
different.
Those are good days.
Yeah. But we've sort of convinced ourselves that it was that anything associated with the 90s, now we have to sort of disparage. And we can't ever talk it up. And it was fun for me to go back and read that trade, because that was, I think those are like issues 15, 16, or something like 18 through 21. Some of the early issues.
They're in the 20s.
Yeah. And just how much fun they were. I mean, just how much joy I had reading them again, of just like pure entertaining fun, and sort of being able to step back from the hypercritical idea of comics have to be any one certain thing, and just enjoying them for what they were. And I was sort of... It was sort of a cathartic moment of like, wow, you know what? Comics just aren't that fun anymore, like they once were. I mean, to me, a lot of comics coming out today are...
Hey, Savage Dragon's still coming out, man.
No, I know. I'm saying...
There's going to be plenty more, too. I'm not done. I haven't said my piece.
But
you do, you write incredibly fun and entertaining comics. It seems like there's
a lack of that, I think, today, of just purely entertainment. Everything seems to have to be something else, or try to be serious, or try to be geared towards an older audience, as opposed to just entertaining and purely, you know, purely good fun comics. Mm. But
well, the idea of going into it was that I wanted Dragon to be sort of the stepping stone between, like, old school Marvel comics, mm-hmm. and Vertigo. So it's like a little more. Actually, gritty. I mean, I would say a little. I guess we use the word gritty, but
right.
It's not actually more mature because it's like it's kind of more immature in a way.
Well, I mean, it seems like,
but it's kind of my love letter to comic books. It's sort of everything that I love about comics, and I've gone off on riffs on various things during the course of it. Going, this is my Calvin and Hobbes phase. Right. This is my Fantastic Four phase. This is my, you know, Frank Miller Daredevil phase, and stuff.
Been
like
able
that.
To throw anything you want into it.
Yeah, that's the coolest thing about writing and drawing your own book is that you can take it any damn direction you want to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is the constant in the book is it's got a green guy with a fin on his head. And it's like, that's all we need, you know. And it doesn't matter if he's a cop. It doesn't matter if anything else about it. It's long as we're following the story of this guy or this guy's legacy. When we get to that milestone.
Did you ever was there ever a point where you were going to stop doing it, or is it just going to keep going?
Yeah.
Like, you ever tempted to be like, I think I might be done with, you know?
I mean, if sales got so bad that I was sitting there going, okay, I'm not going to be able to feed my family anymore, then it's like, all right, I better throw in the towel. But
there's always going to be stories in your head.
Yeah, there's always, I mean, what I would like to do ideally would be to do, okay, I've done 500 issues, you know, just to be able to have it be that kind of number where if anybody else is thinking they're going to try it, they'll go, all right.
So you want to intimidate.
I want the intimidation factor, you know. I'm working on 150 now. I'm halfway up to catching up with Sim, you know. It's all right, I'm going to get there.
Eric Larson wants to intimidate other creators.
That's it.
Don't even think about it.
Well, Savage Dragon is unique in the Image Comics. It is the only original series that is still drawn and written by the original creator. I mean, Spawn is Spawn's the other series from the original books that's still ongoing, but it's had many different Angel creator and, changes. And
yeah,
so that's an accomplishment.
That's all right, you know. It keeps me off the street.
That's what he does.
Well, recently you had announced that you were stepping down as the publisher of Image Comics.
Best move I ever made.
And you had said that was because you wanted to concentrate on Savage Dragon because you had more stories you wanted to tell, and it was hard for you to balance the two. And could you go into that a little bit as far as, you know, how that decision came about?
It actually came about by somebody talking some sense into me. And just kind of going, you know, I think the ship is now steering in the right direction. What the hell? Why are you still doing this? Your book doesn't come out as often as it ought to. Because at that point, there was a year that I think I put out 3 issues,
mm-hmm.
which sucks. Because, I mean, I got in this business to do comic books.
Not to do
shuffle papers. Really anything else. Not to shuffle papers, answer emails, and make decisions. And really, the publishing thing weighed on me a lot. Mm-hmm. I definitely felt like this is a responsibility and I got to be paying attention to all this different stuff. And as soon as I made the decision, it was like both faucets got turned on, and it was immediately like, I've now got so much stuff I want to do in this book. I don't know if I can get to it all, which is kind of an awesome feeling at this stage, you know, 17 years into it, going, I can't wait to put all this stuff together.
To get back into it.
It's exactly. It's really crazy.
Do you find yourself having to be a little restrained with that to say, okay, I have, yeah, there's so much I want to put into it.
I know, you got to focus. You really do. You do have to focus, because if you lose that, then the issues can be so scattered and so like, what? I don't even know how all these pieces fit together.
When you're trying to fit so much stuff in a short period of time.
You know, and I've seen other guys who, I mean, Jack Kirby, when he came over to DC Comics from Marvel, and he went and did the New Gods, and all, he clearly had a ton of ideas yes. what he wanted to do with stuff, and it sort of it all came out in one big wad, and it I think for the average audience, it simply wasn't organized enough that they could follow it.
You know? But we look at, you know, kind of the brilliance of a lot of those ideas decades and decades later, there was, you know, the core ideas were so strong.
But you end up with, you know, characters are introduced and then they vanish, and all these different subplots don't pay off in any way, and then there'll be issues that just concentrate on little pieces of stuff. And if you're just sitting there going, I'm buying this book for this guy, but this guy's not even in the book, what's going on?
It's a communication skill thing of like, you know, if you have a great idea, you need to be able to tell the story.
Yeah.
You know, and I love those books.
You need Stan.
You really
you need Stan.
That was more of a shot at something.
Yeah, that's an ongoing joke.
Stan certainly had. He brought something to the table. There's no doubt about that.
Well, do you have to have kind of like an internal stand to go with your internal Jack? whenever you're doing a creator-owned book and you are the guy, I mean, do you have to have kind of two parts of your head that are working together to
balance that? Some of that. Yeah. There's always the war with the artist and the writer. They go on there because, you know, the writer's like, let's do all the, and the artist's like, I'm not drawing that. It's like, what, you want horses in there? Are you kidding?
They're hard to draw.
It's not going to happen.
When you first broke into comics, were you interested in writing? Did you have an idea in your head that, I know Dragon had been a character that had been sort of floating around in your head for a long time.
See, that when I was a little kid, like fourth grade, I started drawing comics.
Yeah.
Like seriously drawing comics. I would take 8.5 by 11 paper and I would fold it in half and staple it up the side, and I would draw a cover, and then I would draw the story in the inside. And I drew 55 issues.
Really?
55 issues
of Dragon that were never published.
Are you laughing at yourself now, thinking I got 100? I'm going for 500.
Yeah. like, all right.
Take that, young Eric Larson.
Oh my!
Patrick have Brower and his fin head.
Very nice. Hey everybody, good here.
Nice. Big fin head.
Going back to I guess
get the, out of here. What the hell's going on?
To what we were talking about with you, you know, making the decision to step down as publisher, you know. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like when you guys broke away from Marvel and DC initially and created Image, I mean, the idea was, you know, why are we letting other people control the things that we create? Let's do this for ourselves. Let's make ourselves rich and famous. And I mean, not that was necessarily the idea, but the idea of let's control our own creations and do this for ourselves, not for somebody else. And then did that become, you know, more... and I think we've seen it from all of the guys that started Image, but it became much more about running a business at some point than necessarily the fun part of creating comics.
Well, the thing was, you know, I think a lot of people kind of will read interviews with the Image guys and get this impression that there's a groupthink going on there, but there really wasn't. You know, because you've got
a bunch of
because everybody
cowboys.
Really came in there going, I've got my own agenda. You
right.
know, my agenda is I want to write and draw this book until I die. You know,
yeah.
Fast forward 5 years.
You know, and that's one thing. Then you've got.
Yeah, it's not like you guys went and bought a building and everybody worked in that building. Everybody had their own studios.
You know, And then you got Mark, and Mark, I want to just do movies, you know, sort of thing. You know, I want to be a movie star. You know, it's like, all right, well, okay, cool. There's your goal. And you know,
Todd wants to buy expensive baseballs and make toys. And
I just want to make some toys. I think the kids would like some toys.
That's been a bad decision for him.
That's worked out okay. That's good. The kids like the toys.
Well, the one thing, I mean, and we talked about this on our show a couple of years ago. We were talking about image and the idea that, you know, for a lot of years there, you were sort of the torchbearer of image. You sort of were keeping that company running and afloat. And, I mean, at least that was the perception. Yeah. You know, obviously we don't know the inside details of things, but that
it was hard to draw and write all those books.
Tell me about it.
But no, I mean, honestly, I mean, as the publisher of Image, it seemed as if you were sort of keeping things going until, like you had said, it got to a point where you could stop doing that and just. I mean, is that accurate?
I'll take it. You know,
like,
whatever.
That was sort of a loaded question.
I don't know.
So people say you're the greatest comic book artist ever. Is that accurate? You know,
whatever. You know, okay. If that's the impression you're getting, then who am I to say no?
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now you can start your free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Image as a company has been, it's an amazing evolution and transformation of that company from the early days with, you know, the original founders and just doing your creator-owned books. And Image, I think under your tenure as publisher, you know, maybe even a little bit before that, but certainly through that, became a real place for creators to find a home and say, I want to do my book, but I get to take it to this company that adds a lot of credence to it. How was it for you just watching the evolution of that company and what it has become and its place in comics now?
Okay. I mean, because I miss the old days to a fair degree, where I liked that we were all doing this stuff and I liked that we could, you know, have all the characters bouncing back and forth, and I miss that. Which is why, you know, putting together a project like Image United, where you get, okay, guys, let's try this again. You know?
let's go for it again.
And that's kind of a fun project to be working on and putting that together. And that's the six guys, six of the founders, mm-hmm. and we're all just doing a jam book together, essentially.
It's cool.
You know, six different issues. So what we're doing is I'm going to end up laying out the whole damn thing, or most of it.
sure you miss the old days?
Yeah, whatever. You know, I can do this. You know, I've done this sort of thing before. You know, so it's not really heavy lifting. It's just sort of basically doing placement of, okay, this character is going to be here and this guy's going to be there, and then everybody comes in and draws their guy. So, you know, I'll be inking and penciling all the Savage Dragons that show up and all the Super Patriots and whatever other miscellaneous me characters. And then, you know, Valentino will be doing Shadowhawk and whatever other characters are from his book. And there's a few different ones. And then, you know, Todd will be doing Spawn and Mark will be doing, you know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of a cool book. And because Will's sold all these guys away to DC when they bought
Oh,
Wildstorm. Mm-hmm. We can't use the Wetworks guys. So he's actually come up with a new creator own character that he wanted to do. And so that'll be debuting within the book, you know. And so that'll actually be pretty cool.
And when is that scheduled to?
I'm going to say when it's done.
You know, good idea.
It's one of those where, you know, everybody's working on it, and it's, I mean, I think everybody's enthusiastic about it, but it's a lot of time in the air, because it's going to a lot of different people.
That's right. a lot of cat herding.
Yeah, it's a mess. But it's cool when it comes together and you're seeing these pages that have got, you know, art by six different guys on it. It's like, this is the greatest thing ever. It's just so exciting.
Well, going back to what you'd said about when you were a kid and you had made the 55 issues of Savage Dragon that never got published, because I had read somewhere that Dragon was a character you'd always had in your head as a kid. When you were working, you know, in Marvel and DC, how much of, you still had Dragon just like burning a hole in the back of your head that you?
Yeah, kind of. When I went into doing, at that point when I got to be professional, I was like, all right, I need a break from this guy, because this guy had up to that point had been my life. This was the only thing I'd really drawn, and so what I wanted to do is get this out of my system. Go do the other stuff, you know, and just go, okay, I got to do this, I got to do that, I want to work on Spider-Man, I got to work on, you know, all these other characters, and I just was able to get that out of my system. And the back of my head was, if I ever start drawing Dragon, that's it. I'm doing that for the rest of my life.
In
a way, I was kind of putting it off as long as possible, because I knew that once that got rolling, that was it. And
it's been true.
It's been true. Yeah,
it's been true so far.
You know, so thus far.
Here we go.
Well, issue 148. One of the things that I think is cool about your work on Savage Dragon is the fact that there's a looseness to it that allows any of the concepts really to come through, like science fiction, or just knock them out, you know, like dudes with swords fighting each other. And that's always been one of the things that I think has been really cool about Cyber Dragon, and has been cool about your work on it, is it's obvious that your ideas all go into Savage Dragon. Is that like, is it just the way that you think about coming up with stories? Is it always comes from that place of Savage Dragon? Or do you come up with ideas and stuff you want to do and think, oh, well, because it's like a game to fit it into Savage Dragon?
Swords are cool.
Swords are cool.
Actually, there are stuff where I come up with it and I go, yeah, that's really not a Savage Dragon idea. And so I'll sit down and draw it and do it as something else. Because I've done a few different things. We do an anthology called Pop Gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's been a place where I'll be like, you know, I did a story about a guy who woke up one morning and had a cheeseburger for a head. And it was cheeseburger head.
You cannot quite fit that in Savage Dragon.
You can't put a fin on that.
I kind of figure cheeseburger head is existing in a real world, you know, in a weird way. It's sort of like, you know, if somebody woke up like that in the real world, they would be like really panicked.
The drama is lost a little bit in Savage Dragon because anything could happen.
Because it's like, oh, well, there goes a guy with a shark head, and there's a guy with a chicken head, or it's whatever. I'm just one of the gang now, you know. But in the real world, you woke up with that, it's like, what did I drink last night?
How did I end up with the cheeseburger? I did enjoy that story.
And the things I've done since in some of the others, it's like, all right, let's just try something out. Let's see how this goes. You know, I did a... And in Pop Gun 2, a lot of them were just like one-pagers, where I'm like, what if... And it would just be stupid stuff. We're talking at lunch, you know?
Yeah.
What if there was a mummy, but he was wrapped in bacon?
Seeing a pattern here, though. You never had that bacon...
So I did a one-page bacon mummy where he's just terrorizing the town until dogs discover him and descend on him.
I'm thinking that the refrigerator at the Image office is empty this day.
Well, there's other stuff too. I like comics from all generations. My dad bought comics when he was a kid, so I grew up with that as part of my existence. Was, well, comics are like this. They're you know, 64 pages long, and they've got all this extra stuff in it, and you know, or 32. They fluctuated, but I just like that. Hey, there's letters pages, and there's these, you know, one pages of Boffo Yaks kind of stuff. Like, yeah, hey, yeah. here's some gags. They're hilarious.
I was reading. I'm a big Flash fan, and I was reading an old Flash comic, and there was like just a one page. Frank Robbins writing like his own biography, but like in a broken English Japanese accent, because that's where the story was taking place. And I was like, that's weird. But that's kind of from the point of view of thinking of like comics now. It's just, there isn't even a letters page most of the time.
I know.
You know, there's nothing like the weird little things that just sort of like get dropped in.
The craziest things that would go on in comics, you know, that you, when you read back and go, wow, here's an issue of Sergeant Rock that's being narrated by his boots. you would never get that.
Robert Kanigher.
I know, but it's like, wow, that is just a crazy ass idea that he would do a story narrated by his boots.
He wrote a Flash story where the Flash's costume was thinking about like how the Flash could never leave the costume, and it's creepy. Like if I was a kid and I read that, I'd be like, this is a creepy story where this costume can think and talk.
Yeah, and then 30 years later, we have Venom.
that's where that leads.
blame Kanigher for all of it.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because I think you have a fairly unique perspective on it, but you know, going back to what we were talking about before about how the idea of when you guys broke away and created Image, it was you wanted to create your own things, you wanted to do your own characters, have control over them, that kind of thing. And now, all these years later, we seem to be in a place in comics where it's—I don't want to say it's the opposite of that—but it's a little bit backwards or a step back from that, in the sense that we see a lot of creators now doing independent work or doing their own self-publishing stuff to get into Marvel and DC, and then not going any further than that, not creating their own thing or making their own sort of mark with something new. What do you think about that? I would imagine you've had to have thought about that at some point, because, you know, if we go back to the now infamous Robert Kirkman video.
It's like, I think it's kind of sad that you're going to get guys, you're going to get a generation of guys whose legacy is, well, I did this pretty nice run on the Avengers.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, you know, 20 years from now, 100 years from now, people are going to look back and they're going to remember Mike Mignola for doing Hellboy.
Yeah.
And they're going to remember me for having done Savage Dragon. I don't know that they're going to remember every team that was on the Avengers.
Right.
You know?
No, I agree. I mean, I think it's a weird place now where that's the holy grail. And I think it was at one, you know, even when you, you know, I'm sure when you started, you wanted to draw Spider-Man. You wanted,
well,
or you know, I'm sure there was but
it was a good gig, I'll give you that. But it was never like, oh, I can only do Spider-Man. That would be it.
And I know...
Because I was into the Kirby stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So when I was at Marvel, it was like, I wanted to do Thor. I wanted to do Fantastic Four. I wanted to do the Hulk. Spider-Man? Really? that's the one. You know, it's like, it's a good gig. It's
right.
Like one of their flagship books. And it's like, okay, well, I'll take it. But
did you always have in your mind, though, that this isn't what I want to... finished it. I mean, this isn't
one
I
wanted. That's not one. That wasn't the goal. The goal was to do it yourself. And I knew that I didn't want to do Savage Dragon at Marvel.
Right.
Because I knew that if you're in a situation where somebody else owns your character, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, because you really are. I remember at one point, some editor was talking to Keith Giffen and saying, yeah, I don't think Lobo would do that to Keith. And it's like, well,
he would.
I made this guy up. You know, I think I know what my guy would do.
I don't think he would do that.
No, it doesn't seem very Lobo.
Are you the essence of the
what the hell? How did you get to be the authority?
I've written a lot of Lobo fan fiction, and trust me, I know where this character's going, and this is not the direction.
But it does seem like you don't have, I mean, as there's extremely popular writers and artists in mainstream comics today. No. But you don't have the guys, at least not yet, that are setting themselves apart in the sense of creating their own thing. I mean, even going back to...
It's because they're cowards. All right, let's just...
Okay,
let's just
that's... Go. Hey, I yeah. won't necessarily disagree.
There was a different word I was thinking of. It wasn't cowards, but I don't know if...
You can say anything you want. All right, pussies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yes.
They're vaginas.
You know what I'm talking about? Feels kind of good, doesn't it?
Well, are you glad that you've gotten to do...
Wait a minute. This doesn't make sense.
This show's gotten weird.
It's a weird moment of the show. No, are you glad that you got to do both, though? That you've been able to work on some
I'm glad because it was really... I really did feel like I got it out of my system. I got that little break, and I got to do some stuff that I wanted to do. I got to... I couldn't say that I got to tell every story that I wanted to tell, because I've still got that, you know, that great Hulk run in my head, but... Whatever.
Yeah, you but know? You
I'll
didn't
take
see,
that to the grave. I'm fine with that.
You didn't see that as the end of the road, though.
You can just self write and just get some 8.5x11, just staple that, you know, stuff up. True. Do your own.
I'll just use Smash, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, Rob.
I mean, it's not a thing to say that people shouldn't work for Marvel or DC, because I mean, I wouldn't want that either, but I just think you have people right now, especially, that are in a unique position to maybe do things outside of that and don't take the opportunity to do it or don't have
What's sad to me is to think that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to take their Savage Dragon and their Hellboy to the grave, essentially.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like, hey, there's all this stuff we're never going to see. We're never going to see your American flag and your Cerebus and your, mm-hmm. you know, all this cool stuff. And when I think of Stan and Jack and Steve Ditko and stuff like that coming and creating this cool stuff, I kind of think really the legacy that you should get out of that is not, I want to be like Stan and Jack. I want to do a run on Fantastic Four. Should be, I want to be like Stan and Jack. I want to create something that is as cool as that and can endure for 50 years.
And going back to, I just mentioned it, you know, briefly, but the video that Robert Kirkman had put out, you know, sort of a call to arms.
Yeah, they never panned out so you could see that I was holding a gun.
Stay on script. Stay on script.
And it became, you know, sort of a, I don't know, a gag or whatever. But the message there, I think, is important, you know, to people of you know, today in comics, of like, you don't have to just do that. You can, you know, you can make a living doing something for yourself and creating your own thing and making that successful.
Oh, sure.
And instead of, you know, just trying to be the number one, you know.
And you can make a much better living doing that, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert Kirkman, you know, people think, yeah, you gave up those Marvel books and those big Marvel royalties. It's like, yeah, you know, he was making 4/5 of his income from Image Comics at that point, at his height at Marvel. So,
but I mean, to be fair, it is a risk. Because not everyone's going to be Robert Kirkman.
That's
not
true.
Everyone's going to have Walking
That's
Dead
true.
Or Invincible or these.
But there's also people whose creative, you know, impulses are completely uncommercial. You
right.
know, it's like, I want to do Bacon Mummy. It's like, no, that's a one-page gag, man.
And you can't do Bacon Mummy.
You can't do that as a book.
What was that like at in your time as publisher? It's something that has always kind of interested me from that respect, is that you obviously have comics that you like and stuff that your interests kind of gravitate towards, but Image is probably as known for its diversity and variety of comics. How hard was it for you to say, okay, I have to separate Eric Larson comic fan from Eric Larson publisher, and while I may not particularly
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know that I particularly want to single people out. Because it's like, that always sounds like, you don't like my book?
Why didn't you like it?
I thought you loved me. You know. But there is times where I go, you know, I'm not a fan of this, but I realize that there are people who are really enthusiastic about this, and it's, you know, the book has got a good reputation and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, let's take this on. And I can separate myself out from that. I have no problem with that. You know, you can look at something and go, you know, this is well executed. It's not my cup of tea, but it's well executed. Let's bring this on. That would be good.
And on the other side, were there ever any books that you really liked that it was just like, I can't do it. I may like this, but this isn't going to fly. Or were there any books that...
No, I took them on and then they failed. Oh.
That's how it works when you're the publisher.
You know, it's too bad. It's huge. Like, oh, I love this book. You guys are going to love this book. And it's like, oh, dang it. It just didn't, you know, or they didn't produce it fast enough or whatever, and it just didn't come out. Yeah. And we did a book called Pigtail at one point that I was like, this is just an awesome look. The guy who was drawing it and writing it would just, I thought, did a great job. And it was just a great, fun book, and he had this really good feel for the figure, and his backgrounds were great, and he was telling a cool story. And nobody cared, you know? And that they just didn't fall into it. They didn't buy it because it was kind of cartoony looking. And I was like, oh man, that's a shame, because the guy didn't, you know, he ended up doing 4 issues and that was it. And he was just told his little story and then he was done with it. And I was like, wow, that's kind of sad, is when it doesn't explode, because that one was like, holy crap, man, you guys are missing out. This is a great book. But
that unfortunately happens more often.
Yeah, that happens. That does happen. Yeah. You know, and really the struggle is to get those things in front of people's faces and say, look at this, it's awesome. Why are you buying whatever?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with sort of the current marketplace and how the direct market and the monopoly that is Diamond, and how comic book buyers are sort of exposed to work. I mean, it's, 60% or 80% of, you know, comics that are put in shops nowadays are not unfortunately, but for the smaller publishers or for independent books, unfortunately, are Marvel and DC to the most part. And that marketplace is sort of just festering that idea that only those books can survive. And it's so much harder, it seems, for a smaller book or an unknown book to come out and be extremely successful. And this time, I mean, back when you guys were selling millions of issues, I mean, it was sort of a perfect storm of things. Do you think that could happen again? Do you think something like that big could happen? And maybe not in the same way, where it was a speculator sort of boom or whatever, but just the idea that you could have that sort of
mass,
you
know, pop
paradigm
culture
shift in comics. And
I think it could happen. It's going to be somewhat difficult just because of distribution,
right?
You know, because right now, you know, most comic books are just in comic book stores and nowhere else, and that really makes it difficult getting it all out to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, those, because there are states where it's like, you know, you go to North Dakota, you know, there's like 2 comic book stores in the entire state, and clearly everybody in the state is not going there. You know, I go and visit my grandparents in Candu, and it's like, I used to be able to go get comics at the Rexall Drug there, and mm-hmm. can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they just aren't available. They don't know that the comic books exist in a lot of towns.
Well, with a lot of the independent comics, I think there's pretty much a comic for just about anyone and whatever your tastes are, but unfortunately the way things are set up, it's like you kind of have to magically know that it exists before you know that it exists. You know,
yeah.
Like you don't,
yeah, I know.
You have to want it, find it, ask for it before you look at, you sort of have to know before you would know to get it ordered, which is sort of, I think, the major thing holding back a lot of that stuff is you just, people aren't just,
they're not exposed to it. The exposure is so, and even in a day and age where we have the internet and there's so much more stuff out there and the ability to find out information, it's still sort of this weird
cone of silence
where it's like, if you don't already know, you're not getting, you know,
the best way is just to hand a copy of something to someone and say, open it up and look at it. But unfortunately, that just, it's too hard. It's too hard to do. There's just not a good way to.
And you're competing, you know, comics are competing with so much more, you know, in the idea of video games.
Well,
we have to
take out video games.
Yeah, we have to destroy video games.
Well, that's a tough thing, is, you know, I mean, now you can be the superhero and actually be the guy. You know, I'm the Hulk now. I'm smashing up a city. Look at that. Yeah. I totally took down that building. That was cool.
Why do I want to read about it? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I'm going to read about it, and it's, you know, for a while there, it was, oh, it's Bruce Banner sitting in the back of a pickup truck with the shakes for an issue. What the hell?
Well, I mean,
that's not cool. I want to smash some buildings. Give me the video game. The way you love me is a shame. It's like a hurricane.
Yeah. What do you think about, you know, obviously the internet and digital comics is sort of starting to become something more relevant or more, and people are peeking at it a little bit, it seems. Yeah. Do you think that maybe could be?
Maybe. I mean, the digital kind of replicates our old crappy printing that we used to have. Everything's fuzzy. I guess it's beautiful.
History's repeating. Yeah,
but if it's cheaper,
yeah,
people will accept it.
This past week, I went out and bought the X-Men animated series. Came out on DVD. And
sometimes you should not revisit things from your childhood.
I was thinking. You should see
the Savage Dragon show.
There was a Savage Dragon cartoon. Is Savage Dragon ever going to come out on DVD?
Oh man, we've been talking about it forever. I mean, trying to get the rights and making that thing work. And every time it's like, oh, it's closer. It's going to happen, and it just hasn't quite
worked
happened
out
yet. But I get those phone calls almost weekly. Where we're talking about, okay, it's going to happen this time.
It's like 26 episodes?
There's 26 episodes,
How'd you like it?
It was terrible.
But we wanted it on DVD.
Well, it's one of those things where you get that it's you look at the guys who are working on it, and you go, wow, that guy's good, and that guy's good, and that guy's good. You got all these good cooks in the kitchen. What the hell's going on?
Too many.
And it's like, there was really too many guys kind of working at odds with one another, and then you had the network, which was saying, "Okay, you got to do this," and it was really crazy.
What network was it on?
It was on the USA Network.
Okay.
You know, and so they would. I want to do the audio where I'm just bitching about it the whole time.
The commentary track.
Yeah, I want to do the commentary where it's just like,
well, you come back.
And I've met guys who are like, yeah, you can't do that, man. But it's like, Savage Dragon
wouldn't do that.
But the thing is I got into this business because I wanted to do comic books, and that was really it.
Yeah.
So I don't give a shit if I'm you know pissing off somebody in who you know worked on the show or Hollywood or whatever. I don't care. I don't need you. I can do this act alone. You know, I often do. That sort of thing. I just want to do comics. If it ends up that the only entertainment that ever comes from that is this, you know, 26 comic episode thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, other than the comic books, it's like. That's fine. I was
stapling together 11x17s and I printed 55 issues of Savage Dragon long before you came along, asshole. And I'll be doing it long after you're gone.
Well, whatever. You know, it was good exposure. People got to see it. People got to find out. Oh, there's this Savage Dragon thing. Okay, cool. Let me check that out. You know, and it.
Whatever. Didn't ruin Savage Dragon.
It didn't ruin the comic book, really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were some things that they wanted to make some changes, and I actually did change some things in the comic at that period because it's like with Alex. Alex is Hispanic, but she doesn't have a Hispanic last name, and I said, well, there's a reason for that, and see issue 146. But they're like, oh, that's too complicated a backstory. She was adopted. That's too complicated.
Focus groups, and they don't like adopted kids. They don't like
adopted. So they wanted it. They wanted to change Alex's name to you know instead of Alex Wilde. They
Salazar?
Wanted to be like Alex, and then some Hispanic last name. I don't remember what the hell it was, but it was like. Yeah, I don't really want that, you know. Yeah. Anytime there would be a character thing where they would go, yeah, can this, you've got this cop here. He's kind of fat and lazy. That's kind of a racial stereotype. Can we make him white?
and white and fat and lazy.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, we can do that, but we're going to change his name so that people aren't going, hey, what the hell happened to Bruce Robinson? He's now a white guy. You know, it becomes, all right, well, just, you know, so all the white guys. And so, like, the whole thing with Alex was that they didn't want her to be Hispanic, and it was like, okay, so can we color her so she's Hispanic? And they were like, okay, fine, we'll color her so she looks Hispanic. Well, but she can't be. We can't say that she's Hispanic, though. It's like, all right, okay.
Well, sort of the irony.
And then they came back with, now we need Hispanic care.
That's why I started Image.
Yeah, I was going to say that the irony is like you created Savage Dragon to get away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Now as it became successful and off into other things, you're dealing with it all over again. Oh, good God.
No, it's terrible.
Well, tell us, I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you for at least one, like, really juicy good story from back in the days. Maybe even a favorite story. Nothing really happened.
No.
He was drunk Savage Dragon most of the time.
I didn't know I was supposed to pay attention. Oh, man.
He was busy self-stapling.
A favorite moment. Maybe a favorite moment that something happened back in the crazy wild, wild west of the... Nothing.
We've got nothing for you.
Ask Valentino. He remembers all that stuff.
He remembers
all that stuff.
You know,
I mean, it was fun times, but I can't, you know, I can't think of something that would be, oh, and then... You know, Rob Liefeld punched a guy. It's like, you know, there's no, you know, we really didn't fight.
Nearly as crazy as...
You know, it wasn't that crazy. We weren't...
Julie jumped through a window.
Well, that was cool.
Well, all right, then tell us, what do we have to look forward to now that you're full force on Savage Dragon again? What do we have to look forward to in Savage Dragon?
We'll see. Dragon is set in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So as the book goes on, characters that were introduced as like little kids or babies in some cases are just getting older and older and older. So, I mean, eventually it'll be Malcolm's book. You know, so the idea is that it's like, okay, you know, right now he's Robin age.
Oh, he's just gonna catch up to Savage Dragon.
So it's like Dragon just keeps getting older, and you know, and it's like, well, he's in good shape, you know. And you start off the guy's bald to begin with, and so there's not really that many things you can do with him to make him look older.
The stubble gets whiter.
Yeah, it's like what do you do? I mean, if he's growing a beard, I guess I could have there be white in it now. Yeah. You know,
whereas but he is in his 40s, before. He's kind of breaking down a little bit.
He's not bouncing sort back. Of like, wow, you're getting there. And and so I don't know. So I'm looking forward to is kind of paying off a lot of that stuff. The next issue that takes place. Well, 148. Oh, jeez. What can I talk? It's just like, this is out today, right?
No.
When is this?
This is Monday.
When is this? Monday?
Yeah.
So everybody's read this?
Everybody's read it.
We're all on the same page, right?
Yeah, sure.
So we know when I say, anyway. So Dart's in this story.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, and Dart in the series, there was another Dart that was introduced early on in like issue 3 or 4 or something like that. Dart was introduced, and way later we got introduced to Dart's niece, who was like this little kid. Now Dart is dead, and her niece is now stepping into that role, and basically becomes a villain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 149 that I just did is really Dart's backstory on, okay, what happened to her that led her to do this? And it's just cool to be able to kind of take a book and be able to go, okay, now we're going to use this little bit from here and this little bit from there and pull together a story that makes some sense, you know? Like you read 150 issues of Spider-Man or 150 issues of the Hulk, and there's been so many creative changes over that period of time that a subplot that somebody may have started early on never gets paid off in the way that it was supposed to, or in some cases it doesn't get paid off at all.
Yeah.
You know, you read it through Daredevil and you're like, wow, there's this guy who can walk on these squares in the sky and he's going off into space and he knows that Daredevil is Matt Murdock, and yeah, nobody ever used that guy again. You know, he just goes walking up there, and it's like, what the hell? You know, nobody pays that off. And the cool thing about doing a book on your own is that you can pay off that stuff, and you can set up things. You know, I had a flash forward in issue 100 or in issue 29, I think, that eventually I'm going to use that page again as, okay, this is, you're just present. Reading the story now, bam, this is present. And it's, and you can do that when you're doing this on your own. Yeah. Whereas it's just impossible to be able to do that within the tag team way that comic books are done.
I do have to say my favorite part of the Free Comic Book Day issue was the three wise guys, the three kids planning to extort money from both sides. I quite enjoyed the
a little wise guy.
the little wise guys. I was like, oh, yeah. If only Flip a Dipper back in the day would have squeezed money out of both sides to give
Flip a Dipper.
I was like, oh, that was good. I really enjoyed the issue.
Oh, cool.
I was like, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, well, it's neat. And actually, just, you know, part of that is just, I loved that costume, Daredevil costume. And then I ended up buying a whole mess of old Daredevil comics and reading all that stuff and getting sort of immersed in that little world. And I was like, all right, I'm going to bring this into Dragon, and then I'm going to screw everything up.
You know, the text piece in the back about Daredevil was kind of interesting, because I was like, oh, you know, it is interesting how that character has just sort of, you know, once it became public domain, is now just sort of like popped up kind of all over the place in all kinds of weird little places. And it's kind of interesting to see so many different people do so many different things with the same base.
I think AC Comics was the first to...
Yeah.
They had used Daredevil, and they call him Red Devil, I think.
Yeah, I think.
You know, and then Dynamite came along and they're like death defying Devil.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of unwieldy.
Stop being pussies.
Just call the guy's named Daredevil, okay? We're gonna call him Daredevil. Nice. So it's just, you know, as long as I don't call him, well, the cool thing about the name Daredevil, just in terms of copyright stuff, is that it's a word. It actually is a real word that's in the dictionary. So
you can't own.
It's really kind of hard to say that, to not be able to use it in some form, you know. So while I can't call him Daredevil on the cover because that would be a violation, I can call him, you know, Golden Age Daredevil, or
stop being such a Daredevil.
You know, whatever.
Well, I think we need to let this man go.
Yeah, he's
going to
sign some
books.
Yeah, okay. Well, just kick me out of here.
Come on, Brave.
You want to hang around? What do we got? What do we got to expect for issue 500?
500. It's going to be a good one.
It's going to be good.
Do you have a release date on that yet? Or
when it's done?
When it's done.
Well, at this point, I'm monthly, and I'm hitting them pretty regular. So, I'm looking forward. Actually, would like to next summer do a biweekly during the summer. Just
nice.
That would be fun.
That would be.
But, I just want to catch up. I want to be there.
Could be a perfect opportunity to bring back Image's slimline.
It's like 500 home runs. You just, you know, you're just trying to get to that landmark.
Yeah, I just do. It's like, I feel, you know, just all the time that I was a publisher and I wasn't putting out issues fast enough. Towards the end of last year, when I quit being the publisher, I was like, so do I not solicit for a while, or what do I do? Because I had solicited like 7 or 8 issues, and I hadn't been able to put them out yet.
Right.
And so right at the end of the year, I just was having them come out like every couple weeks.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's fun. That's fun times. I like comics like that, where it's just like, bam, 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 bam.
Well, you know,
I got caught up on it.
I did. It's something else that popped in my head. I was thinking... was there ever a time, you know, when you were not able to put out as many issues as you wanted to, did you ever think, well, maybe I could get someone else to script it or work on it with me? Was there ever...
No,
nothing at all. No. I mean, that was it's yours and you want to do it
at
all.
At this point, it's just far enough along that I was like, I don't want to... You know, we did a Dragon, Savage Dragon miniseries in the midst of all that. Mm-hmm. Robert Kirkman wrote it, and
he was a pain in the ass to work with.
Well, it's just for whatever reason, there were some deadline issues with it.
Okay,
and it didn't. So it's like, could you get this thing out just so I can have some Savage Dragon presence on the stands?
Right,
and then they weren't able to get it out on time. Mark Engler drew it, and it's like, and he kind of does his version of me in a way,
right?
You know, so it's like, oh, this will be all right. But it just didn't. They didn't get it out on timely enough basis. Like, oh, I'm blowing it, and now these guys are.
What's the point of bringing? Yeah, what?
Damn it, right. Robert! You're never going to make partner if you keep doing this.
I think Mark had a day job too, so it's there was excuses aplenty, but it was kind of like, I just like doing it. I like that it's my book, and I like that you can count on. There being that consistency to it. And I think if I had somebody else script it, that it would sound wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have the right voices. And if you have somebody else draw it, then it's like, well, who the hell's that? That doesn't look like...
The point.
I didn't want to be Bob Kane. That wasn't what I set out to do.
Right.
And I want to be that guy who just... That's it. He does this book. The goal is more to be the Charles Schulz than to be
right.
Bob Kane.
Sure, sure. Yeah. You reading anything good? You still reading comics?
Is there anything good? What's out there?
That's cool, man. The Umbrella Academy. That's good.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Work for it.
I don't know what else is good.
Savage Dragon.
Savage Dragon is good.
I read that one. I've actually been following that one for a while. And I'm kind of really looking forward to the next few.
I really, out of Image, I really like Proof. And it was great to see Dragon have a guest appearance in Proof.
When anybody asks me, like, what are you reading? What are you following? It's always like, following all the Image stuff. Just because... You know, I'm really near it, but those are like my favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, The Walking Dead, oh, I love that book. You know, and Invincible, I love that book. You know, so a lot of the stuff we do, that's the thing that you know. Oh, Jersey Gods is in. Let me see it.
Jersey
Gods
is pretty awesome.
You know, it's like these are the things that to me get excited. There are artists that work at other companies where I'll go. Oh, I love Humberto Ramos. I want to see what he's doing, you know, and I'll follow his stuff for Chris Pacello, and it's like, oh, I want to see what he's doing, you know, and there are guys like that who I'll just kind of follow them around. There really aren't characters over there that I'm hooked into, and it's mostly because of the baton being handed over one too many times, you know, where you just go, what? You know, you're reading the story, you go, wait,
say that.
What? Harry Osborn's back, and Norman Osborn's hanging around, and what? And Gwen did what? That's not cool.
I always thought there's certain, you need like a certain hard wiring. Either you really don't care about that stuff, or like if you do care about it, it's just too hard to keep following like certain characters. So it's always like either, because I've always read The Flash, and The Flash has been turned over so many times, but I don't think I have a thing in my head where I get too weirded out by that for whatever reason. Like
the thing to me, it was like, you know, when they did with Spider-Man where they're like, we're gonna undo the marriage, we're gonna, you know, it never happened. It's like, all right, because it throws that into that place where you're going, I don't know what counts anymore.
Yeah.
Did this story still happen, and how did it happen? Did he meet this guy or did he not meet this guy? Because he met this guy because Mary Jane was there, and now if Mary Jane wasn't there, did he still meet that guy, and why and how did he meet that guy? Sort of like when Crisis and Infinite Earths happened, and you're reading those books and you go, I don't know how Superman met Batman anymore.
Okay. I always liked that, but I think that's just the way I was. My head works sometimes. Is that I'm always like, but I was a huge. I always liked the DC stuff when I was a kid because I'm a huge history nerd. So the whole idea that there was more like all kinds of history behind everything always just intrigued me as a kid. But like well, I could see dropping it.
I also think, no big deal. Like Spider-Man, I mean, at some point we have to sort of let go of what we want it to be and let hopefully another generation take over it. And maybe that's, I honestly think with the, you know, like with Amazing Spider-Man, what, regardless of what they did with it, now it's better than it has been in a long time. And it actually is more accessible and you know, for me,
I didn't think that was not in the camp that thought that breaking them up was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm there for that. I would have gone through a quick divorce and just been like, let's, you know, she can't stand the idea that he's out doing superhero stuff. He's always getting messed up. You know, I love you, but I can't live with you if you're going to keep doing this kind of thing. This can't work out for me. And then having him go through that little thing, and then he could refer to her as his ex, which is like, that can be ex-girlfriend or ex-wife. And, you know, just, you don't have to refer to them as having been married. And essentially, it can become what it is now without having there be this big question mark over 20 years worth of the book.
Well, you see, it's okay to like have tremendous violence, but you can't have divorce.
I know that they didn't want it to be that stigma.
Apparently, yeah.
But it really is.
But is that like a stigma anymore?
Is Joe Casella Catholic, maybe? I don't know.
So many people have parents that are divorced. They're like,
instead of that stigma,
there, you know.
Yeah. We bring in the devil.
Yeah, devil did it.
Instead of Matt Murdock, divorce lawyer, you know. Yeah.
I just think you could have undone that in as few issues as they undid it before, and you would have, it would be so much cleaner in a way.
Yeah, be a cleaner
you
break.
Know? And you wouldn't... Yeah.
You wouldn't be stringing along.
You wouldn't be people going, I don't...
The question of how
things happen. Yeah, I mean, I think it's such an inherent problem with when you are publishing the same character for 50 years. It's like, you're going to have... Everybody's going to have their time frame of when that character was theirs and what You know what I mean? And so no matter what you do at some point, if you're going to shake things up or change things, you know... You're going to piss off somebody.
I mean, a lot of us, when you're reading comics, are going, oh, man, I'm reading Spider-Man. Wouldn't it be cool if Spider-Man got older like I got older? And
it's not right.
I'm graduating from college now, and wouldn't it be cool if Spider-Man also graduated from college and moved on and blah, blah, blah? That would be awesome. And you don't realize, well, if they'd been doing that from day one, Spider-Man would be pushing a walker right now.
And those would be exciting stuff.
You know, or we'd have essentially, you know, the Spider-Girl comic where we've got the second generation of all these guys. Because, you know, you're not going to...
Well, whenever I hear people say that, I'm always like, there are books that do that. You know, for instance, Savage Dragon. If that's the thing, you're interested...
Yeah, hey, looky there.
It all comes back to me.
Yeah, whenever someone says that, I always think, God, you know, there are books that do that.
Well, but you have to set that up from the beginning, I think. You can't all of a sudden, after 30 years, go, oh, you know what, let's age Peter Parker.
When they started it, that's the idea. You know, I mean, Peter Parker graduated from high school, and he went on to college.
Yeah.
You know, the Fantastic Four started off. Reed and Sue weren't married.
But I don't think they had the idea that they would
And then they had a kid.
Right.
And, you know, she got pregnant one annual, had the kid the next annual, you know.
But I think it got to the point where it was, okay, if we're going to keep these characters viable for...
Well, I know. You know, I mean, really, it became, as soon as Stan stopped writing stuff, they're like, okay, time to put on the brakes.
Yeah.
This
because
these guys are going to get old, and
we're not going to be able to sell pajamas and
well, sure, and you also, you can't count on the next generation giving you another Spider-Man,
right?
You know,
right.
It's like, you're going to give me this hot commercially viable thing that I'm going to be
iconic
able to use
character,
forever, you know, and it's like there are solutions to all that stuff. You could go, okay, well, Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, those are set in the 60s. If we're telling Spider-Man stories, it all takes place in the 60s. And you can, and then it becomes,
but then it's
now
like,
it's a period piece.
Right.
You know, and is that cool?
Not to 15-year-old kids today.
No, not to 15-year-old kids.
12-year-olds, yeah, certainly it's not.
Interesting, thinking of Dragon and how he is aging in real time, and you guys are roughly the same age, is
yeah,
there?
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. So I can just kind of track that. And go, okay.
This is kind of your day. This is a slice of life.
Apart, I can just watch it. All right, he's got to lose a limb.
Is there a lot of you in Dragon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just personality. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's an idealized version, obviously. I mean,
you always.
I can only punch people halfway through a wall, where he's even making the full.
Yeah, I saw you trying to pick up a car earlier, and it didn't work out well.
It was a struggle. I can do it, but
it wasn't a compact, though. To be fair, it was it was an SUV.
It's thrown out my back. I got to put ice on it, sort of thing. But they're characters within that I can go, okay, this is kind of my son, and this is kind of my other son, and I'm just, as these characters get older, kind of go, all right, just because I can monitor them as they grow up, and this, okay, kids in my, Christopher's class are basically the same age as Angel, so it's like, all right.
You have reference. You always,
yeah,
always
I've got a reference handy in the other room.
What are you kids
doing?
I'll
tell you now, Joe.
What are you guys talking about?
You're taller than Mom. What the heck?
Hold this
you're
axe.
You're like 11. What are you doing taller than Mom at 11?
Yeah, hold this axe.
Yeah, can you pick up the sword?
Come
you
for me. Yeah.
Come here. Take on that robot.
All right. Well, Mr. Larson, we thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to meet you. Even though I did meet you last year at Wizard. I was drunk though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I was on PCP. So.
On Angel Dust.
at the after party. And you actually told us right there that you were going to make the announcement that you were stepping down as publisher the next day.
Look at that. Yeah. And I did.
I know, and you did.
Man of my word.
I thought you were lying.
You followed through. You followed through.
Through.
It has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you again so much for coming in Chicago and being part of Free Comic Book Day here and spending some time with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, you're absolutely. And anytime that you're back in Chicago, let us know. We'd love to chat with you a little bit more.
Cool.
And then we'll go ahead and make plans ahead of time for issue 500.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be a good one.
You can show up at your shop on your hover bike.
Thinking maybe, double size.
Special double size. Very good drawing now.
So much work.
All right.
We'll keep making comics, please.
Will do. All right. Keep reading them.
All right. Well, I want to thank Eric Larson. He was a fun guest, man.
Yeah, very much so. I hope I wasn't trying to pressure him for controversial
stories.
No, it wasn't that. I mean, I just thought he has a pretty unique perspective on where comics are now, maybe, and how coming from one of the most visionary events for guys to go out and make themselves in Image Comics, he probably has some insight into what he,
He was there for, comics in the 80s and then the formation of Image and the boom and then the subsequent, bust and then kind of the creative resurgence. So he's been there for a lot of what we think of as modern comics now. So he's had some great insight.
I liked how, it's like we brought up the idea of everybody talks so bad about the 90s. Like, yeah, not me. They were great days. It's like, yeah, well.
We were bathing in champagne.
Yeah. But, I mean, the idea that those guys had a lot of balls and took a risk to go out and go, yeah, we're not going to do this for Marvel and DC anymore, even though we're successful there. We're going to do it on our own. Is something that I think we don't see maybe enough of today. Now it's like creators are more than happy, and it's more of a security thing, and just there's a risk there to just go out and try and make your own way in comics, and it's not the same marketplace either.
Sure. Well, it's hard enough to break in as it is, and to go through all of the working your way up, and then to achieve, you know, a level where you think that you've made it, and then to say, well, I'm going to abandon that and throw caution to the wind and
risk. Yeah, it's purely a selfish thing on my part of going, well, I want to see the biggest and brightest names in comics to go and create the next Hellboy or the next Sin City or the next, you know, Savage Dragon or whatever, you know what I mean? And because, you know, regardless of what, you know, what we all sort of talk about the 90s now, it's like when those guys did it, it was exciting and fun and amazing. And, you know, I know everybody just bashes the 90s and that era of comics like there was nothing that was good then, but that's really far from the truth.
It's more what came out of it, not the genesis of it. You know, that was very exciting. And then, you know, comics kind of lost their way for a little while, but without that explosion of creativity, we wouldn't say that they lost their way.
I mean, there was... They were what they were, and we look back on it now and sort of like are pissed off at ourselves because we bought a bunch of, you know, like
we bought five copies
of every book that came out, and they didn't turn out to be worth anything. Yeah. So we're sort of pissed at ourselves for doing that, and so we...
It's maybe misplacing the blame.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And instead of sitting there going, yeah, well, you know what? Everybody takes shots at Rob Liefeld nowadays, but at least the guy was doing... You know, I was buying every fucking book that he put
I still have five copies of Savage Dragon number one. It doesn't mean it was a bad book.
And, yeah, I wasn't just buying... And it wasn't like I was just buying it because of that. I was also... I like that stuff that those guys were doing. I still remember, you know, when they... You know, Liefeld was doing Longshot and the X-Men and all that stuff, Larson was doing Spider-Man, and McFarlane was doing Spider-Man and the Batman stuff and everything. And it was like,
Tim Lee,
I couldn't get enough of that stuff. And then when those guys broke off into their own thing, it was amazing. It was unbelievable. And so, yeah, I think we sometimes, you know, bash those guys, you know, the 90s and those guys in particular, but... at least they had the balls to go do something on their own and
I hate to think about comics today if they hadn't. A comics world without Image is a much darker comic book landscape.
And I just I'd like to see more guys do that kind of stuff and go out and do their own thing and make their own mark and create something that can be wholly theirs and not live and die on the whims of the editors.
Bobo wouldn't do that.
It's just, to me, it's like, okay, you have guys now that are, you know, successful or mildly successful, or making a living at Marvel and DC, but how long is that going to last? You know, and maybe, you know, maybe a guy like, you know, Bendis, yeah, sure, he's going to have a decade or two, you know, 15 years or 20 years, but there's a lot of other guys that are just sort of making a living doing it or being mildly successful in Marvel or DC. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, are they still going to have that job there? Are they still going to be making a living?
Well,
if not, what do they have to fall back on?
You know, we talked with Andy Parks a couple weeks ago, and, you know, Andy's worked in mainstream comics for the majority of his career, but he's very aware of that, and that's why he's wanting to write his own stuff. And
yeah, he wants to create something on his own. Yeah, because ultimately, if you don't create something that you can live off of for the next 20, 30, 40 years, you're at the whim of somebody else. And I don't think that's why guys got into comics in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know.
We're glad that there are guys like Eric Larson to lead by example there.
So. Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to wrap this one up, and we'll be back next week with more talk about Free Comic Book Day. But hope everyone had a great Free Comic Book Day. And if you were in Chicago, hope you took in the sights at Challengers Comics and got to meet Eric Larson yourself or cruised over to Dark Tower to meet that cast of characters. So we'll be back next week with our Free Comic Book Day episode. In the meantime...
In between times.
In between times.
Times.
Ooh, I like that.
In between times. It's like science fiction.
We'll be everywhere in
and around the multiverse.
Steampunk episode.
Studio B.
That would be kind of fun.
Steam powered man.
Warren Ellis. Steampunky.
Ooh, heroes are bad.
I got it. And women smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
And drink
yeah. That shouldn't sound like
I like it too. It's just.
If there's a woman in a Warren Ellis book, she's more than likely going to have the biggest set of balls in the book and you know, drink and fight and
act, like, act like an asshole guy
more than that.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.